Okay, good. Well, nice to see you all. It looks like there's some people here that weren't here last time, and probably vice versa. And if you weren't here last time, you might be not quite sure why these are a bit different. But as you know, we've got a conference, stroke retreat, whatever you want to call it, coming up on creativity. So these evenings, last one, this one, and two more, are devoted to sort of thinking about creativity in advance. Because the conference isn't teaching creativity, it's about exploring creativity and becoming more creative. So even if you're not coming to the actual conference, I hope there's something here that will sort of inspire you. And if you missed the last one, then not only is the recording that we do normally, but actually at the end of today, the material from last week and this is there as six short talks. So that sort of 15 minutes at a time, you can catch up on everything if you really want to explore the topic anyway, even if you're not taking part in the retreat. So this isn't like our normal Bible school evening. That's the first thing to say. However, do please chip in as you feel you can and have something to say. Certainly, I won't stop from time to time anyway. So as we look at creativity, there's several different aspects of it that I didn't cover last time, and I want to say something about this time. And we are going to end up, the last section is on creativity in the church, which is probably the main thing that some of you would like to listen to. But just picking up from last time, really, and thinking about being creative. I said everybody is creative in one way or the other. You can't sort of say I'm not, because God has made you that way. As part of Him being the creator and setting up His creation in the way that He has, He wants us to be co-creators with Him, to explore the gifts and the talents that He's given us and use them to both bless Him and bless others, as well as to be more fulfilled in what we can do. And creativity isn't just about being artistic and painting great pictures or making magnificent models and things like that. It covers a whole variety of things. And we said that at a basic level, if you were a 5-year-old, you'd call creativity something like having fun and making stuff at that sort of level. So it's not about being brilliant and original and creating masterpieces and things like that. It is just allowing your whole being to become part of a process, in which at the end there's a reward from having, well, done something. And one of the key things we did say is that there's no mistakes, there's no failures in all this. It's not that there's a definite end product. And if you don't make it, then you feel awful about yourself and you go away and think, I can never do this, shouldn't be even trying, and so on. So there's no such thing as failures, there's just future learning opportunities. There's just paths to explore and so on. So it'd be good to hear from some of you during the course of the evening, particularly if you are creative in some way, just to see if some of the ideas I mentioned resonate with your own experience. So we'll keep an eye out for hands going up, because you can interrupt at any time, even though I will stop occasionally. So, well, however good you are at being creative, however much you get involved in that, there will be times when things don't work out for various reasons, and they have to be faced, and not they have to be overcome rather than seen as big sort of downfalls or things that are going to put you off completely. What happens if you get stuck? Everybody's trying to do something of that kind, creative and so on. At times we'll feel, I've got stuck, whether you're writing something or whatever. What do you do then? Well, one of the things people often say, and it is good advice, is that you just sleep on it, because something happens while you're asleep. Part of you shuts down and another part of you keeps going. And your mind can still be working on things even while you are asleep. And you probably all had the experience that suddenly you wake up in the morning and something comes to you immediately and you think, oh, that's what I now do, or that solves that problem. Or that's an idea that I didn't think of before. So you might be feeding yourself during the day on trying to do something, having ideas and so on, and feeling you're getting nowhere. But actually, it's not wasted, because the subconscious mind is still working on it while you are asleep. And we're going to talk quite a bit about the way the mind works later on, actually. So getting stuck is not something to worry about. It happens. And sometimes it sort of unlocks itself just by having a break, taking a rest, or indeed having a good night's sleep, coming back the next day. But what if you have longer periods of blockages or fallow periods, as they're called? Again, this is all part of the process, and it's not about getting all desperate and thinking, oh, I can't do this anymore, I've become useless or something. One illustration of this I've had is if you imagine that you're eating, so you keep the fork keeps going to the food and to the mouth, but half the time the fork has to return empty to the plate, ready for the next mouthful to be picked up and transferred to the mouth. In other words, half the time you're actually feeding yourself, and the other half of the time you're preparing to feed yourself. So these fallow periods can be just as much part of the process as the actual picking up some food and putting it in your mouth. Again, basically, it's to be expected. It's part of the whole thing. Don't see it as the end of the world from that point of view. But one of the things that does disturb creativity greatly, and it can seem very trivial at the time, but it's very devastating, is just simply getting interrupted in the midst of something. And studies have shown that if you're really focusing on something and you can be getting on well with it, just the slightest little interruption can take you a long time to recover back to where you were in terms of your focus and your concentration. It might just be someone walking past. You see them out the window. It can just be a little noise somewhere and it catches your attention, and suddenly you're dragged away from what you're really trying to do. And it can take you up to 20 minutes, according to studies, to get back to the point where you were. Because your mind starts to then think, oh yes, that reminds me of this, or yes, I should be doing that, or oh, I haven't seen that person recently, or something. And so suddenly you're distracted greatly. So if you're taking creativity sort of seriously enough to not want to do that, you have to create these boundaries of space and time where you're not likely to be interrupted. Set aside time, set aside a particular space that's dedicated to a task, and just try and keep out any kind of interruption or disturbance. Another thing is sometimes you just have to be prepared to be indecisive. Now, you may think, but that's not necessarily a good idea. Surely you've got to make decisions and so on. And we don't like it if there's a sort of sense of indecision around here. It makes us feel as though we're leaving things open too much. But the creative mind will be able to cope with that. It doesn't feel any discomfort about the fact that I haven't come up with an answer yet. I haven't made a decision yet on this. And as long as you have got the chance to put things off, in other words, you're not working to a deadline, then sometimes it's best to say, okay, this is not the right time to make that decision. In fact, if you make a decision too soon, the problem is that you might miss out on some new ideas, some new information, some extra thinking about it. And then you think, oh, I need to go back and sort of reverse that decision or start again. So a creative mind gets used to indecision or the delay of making a decision, deferring a decision, just to make sure that you're not making a decision too soon and therefore missing out on something. But leaving things open can make some people a bit anxious, and so they tend to rush into a decision. And you notice I'm talking about not just doing something artistic, I'm talking about making any kind of decision here. So you can apply this to all sorts of different things in life where you're trying to just solve problems, sort situations out. The natural mind says, quick, get on with it, make a decision. Then you feel more comfortable that you've made a decision. But actually, the more creative mind will just say, okay, I'm going to live with that sort of amount of intolerance for the moment, and not make the decision until I really have to, or I really feel that I've got it right. Otherwise, you're pressurizing yourself into that. Anyone got any comments so far? I mean, please do chirp up if any of that resonates with you in some way and you feel, oh yes, I understand that, or I've come across that in certain things I've been doing. So does anyone want to say anything at this point?
Too many interruptions resonates.
Yes. Okay. Can you think of a particular example where you were doing something and you got a bit of a disruption and you just couldn't get back into the task?
Yes, all the time.
all the time. Okay.
All the time. I sometimes, you know, flit from one thing to another because of the interruptions, and it does necessitate me having the house to myself, to really get on top of things.
Well, you've unmuted.
I was just thinking back. I'd be so lost in what I was doing that my husband would come in from work at 5:30 and there was no dinner going.
Because I was still
taken up with what I was doing, sadly. Yeah. The time flies when you're having fun.
Yes, indeed. Good.
Not a good idea. Not a good idea to keep your husband waiting for you.
But I think people that certainly are involved in creative things, a lot of the time, they have to set these boundaries. They have to set times apart when, if they've got to write a certain amount or they've got to achieve something, they must try and make sure that there's no disruptions going on, interruptions to be avoided. Another thought here is that anybody that is creative or wanting to be creative will always realize that they will run out of ideas. Their own sort of inner well of resources is finite. So what do? Well, they switch from output to input. In other words, they will go and enjoy someone else's creativity, often in the same field, but it could be in something else. So for instance, writers will say, novelists will always read other people's novels. Okay, so they don't think, well, I'm writing, I don't want to read anybody else. They will read other books. Filmmakers always watching other people's films, not necessarily to criticize them and so on, but just to engage in an input version of what they normally do. It actually rests your brain from trying to think something through, but something is seeping in at the same time. And you might be stuck for ideas on something. So you might not be an artist, but if you go and visit an art gallery, you're actually absorbing someone else's creativity and it might spark something else for you. So exposing yourself to other people's creativities can sometimes help our own brains to focus on our tasks like that. Have you ever had ideas, really brilliant, great ideas that come to you at the most inconvenient time? Usually perhaps as you're just falling asleep. Or you're on a journey in a crowded bus or train or something, or you're halfway through something else and you get this brilliant idea, and then like you think, I'm going to come back to it later in the day, and then you can't remember what on earth it was about and you've forgotten it. Well, one obvious piece of advice here is keep a notebook or keep something handy. These days people use digital devices to record ideas as they come, so that then you can go back to it at another time and you can sort of pick up where your thought came from and so on. So the use of recording things, notebooks or whatever, just to make sure that that brilliant world-changing idea that you had doesn't get lost completely. Again, this is something that creative people do a lot. Just jot anything down at any time. You never know if it's going to be useful. It could come back into play several days or weeks later even. And of course, people operate differently at different times of the day. And your time clock might be different from someone else's. Some people work better first thing in the day. Others seem to take ages to get going and work better at night and so on. Some people even work during the night because that's when they perhaps feel they've got less distractions and somehow their mind focuses on their task better. So creative people get used to the time of day when they can best be productive, if you like. And I suppose, coming back to something I've said anyway, but in a different sort of way, is that you've got to be prepared for a lack of clarity at times and a certain sense of confusion, not quite being sure where you're going on something. Our minds will tell us, let's get this clear, sorted out. We do prefer clarity. But something totally new might be a bit hazy or fuzzy at first, simply because it's new. So you don't have an immediate understanding of something. You just have the beginnings of an idea. And if you're not comfortable with that, don't recognize that, you might discard something too soon. Because creativity often takes place within this atmosphere of sort of uncertainty, where things eventually slowly come into play a bit more. And eventually you will sort out what's good or what's bad. But if you get put off too soon, you might end up strangling a good idea. But sooner or later, you might think, no, that doesn't really work, and let's start again. Let's get used to that. But you don't sit around waiting for the big idea. Okay, I'll get going once I've got the big idea. Sometimes you just need a small idea to start with, and it will grow. Or you'll get another small idea that might link in with it. So small ideas are often the best way of starting something creative. You might not get the whole of it all in one go and think, right, now I know what I'm going to do. But you get an idea to start with. And if it's something that you can make your own, in the sense of it's personally attractive, it appeals to you, it's something you can own, and something, if you like, to go back to the idea of a five-year-old, that you start to play with, then it will develop into something bigger over time. And you're not worried about it being small or whatever, you just play with it, and then you might be amazed at how it can grow and become something bigger and better. And you can also start with ideas that you pick up from somewhere else. Interestingly enough, some of the really great creative pieces, various kinds, actually start with an idea that's borrowed from somewhere else. You could trace it back to someone else or somewhere else. Apparently, a lot of Shakespeare's plays come from other ideas that people had written about. They're known plots, but he took them and did something which, according to some people, are a million times better than what was originally out there. So you can pick up your ideas from anywhere. Small hops can be as important as imaginative leaps. But big leaps sometimes take longer to work out where you're going and what you do next. Small hops, little steps on the way, lots of small sort of improvements. Each bit might seem not very creative, but by the time you've taken enough of them, you've ended up with something which has been very creative, adding to the larger picture. And I'm sure that happens a lot when films are made or shows are put on or big productions are made of one kind or another. There has to be many, many small steps involved in this, with changes along the way and so on. Any other comments from anything that resonates with you on anything? Not at this stage? Okay. another interesting fact is that people who are creative in one field, though, usually have other fields in which they're less creative themselves, but they enjoy, because it's a sort of relaxation for them. And it keeps their general brain going on certain things. So someone who might not be a musician will still play a musical instrument, even though their main outlet of creativity is somewhere else. Or someone might just engage in some writing, even though they're not really a writer, or play games or something else, because they recognize that it helps if you're doing something else in another field, rather than just slogging away at what you think is your main one all the time.
Yeah, Paul, something that's come to mind just as you were talking a little way back was other people's expectations of what you're doing. Because I know my brother-in-law had great expectations as what I was going to do with the art equipment that he got me the Christmas before last. But things turned out rather differently. And I think sometimes if you've got other people's expectations, that can be a bit like having a bucket of cold water thrown over you.
Yeah, Yeah, the moment you feel you can't meet that, you're going to be put off and not even start eventually.
Yeah.
It's almost the opposite of encouragement, isn't it?
Mm.
You need to encourage someone to, pick up the pencil, have a go, start to draw something, whatever. But if someone says, right, this is my expectation of you.
Yes.
Paralysis, anxiety, things like that are killers. You've got to be relaxed. You've got just to say, I'm here to have fun. I'm here to try something. If it turns out to be a mess, what does it matter? Because ultimately, you're exploring and you're doing something of just putting yourself into something. It's not necessarily the end product that matters. Obviously, if you're doing it for a living, then perhaps it does matter. But we're not talking about super geniuses or mega talented people. We're talking about every one of us just being human in the way that God created us. So sometimes when you're creating, you just want to express the mood that you're in. So if you're feeling really happy, you will try and do something creative that expresses that. But sometimes if you're feeling sad or even in a real sense of desperation or, you know, distress or something, you can express that through creativity. So you can use that to release your emotions in all sorts of different ways. Now, the great geniuses that are created in the past can sort of do things in the opposite way. Beethoven wrote some of the most glorious and joyful music when he was in the depths of the despair. But he was a genius. So they can sort of work on two levels, if you like. But for most of us, we want to just tap into where we are. And so if we're feeling really happy, that's when you might write a song or a poem or just express yourself in a certain way like that. If you're feeling the opposite, well, then you'd write about that. Seize the moment, really, where you're at, and use that. I'm sure that's behind some of the Psalms, really, isn't it? That's why there's such a variety of Psalms, because there's such a variety of life experiences, and they were being expressed and given back to God in that sort of way. So, seize on to what's going on. Another thing that people who are creative have to get used to is actually being prepared to sacrifice what they think are brilliant ideas, but just in the end are not going anywhere. But they're not failures. But if they don't seem to fit at the moment, you have to be ruthless. It's been described as creative people have to get used to killing their darlings, things that they really like. But sometimes if they don't fit, they get in the way. And experienced people in something will realize, okay, I need to get rid of that because it's not working and it's getting in the way of something better. So you have to be ruthless at times. And also, and this comes back to the idea of encouragement or expectations, though, it is useful to have feedback and to find out what other people do think. And just to basically, it might be, how do you feel when you watch what I've done or listen to what I've written or something? Do you understand it? Did it move you in any way? Did it take you on a journey? Was it credible or was it confusing? Because until someone else has fed back to you, you're probably not too sure whether or not you've been really doing something in a way that's useful. But people say once you have picked up this sort of feedback from different people, they might say, oh yes, that didn't work, or I don't like that, or I'm confused here and something. Don't ask them to put it right for you, because they won't know. They know, they sense something isn't quite working for them, but they're not the ones that's got the ability to put it right. You have to go away and work on it to put it right. It's still your creativity. And then when you've made changes and done something, usually you go to someone else, not the original person. And I'm giving an example here from people like who write regularly and therefore need that kind of feedback. You go to another group so that they don't know where it started and where it came from and what changes have been made. So they're looking at it completely afresh. And then you make changes according to what they say. And then you might bring in another person. And maybe at the very end, you go back to some of the original people when you feel you've dealt with all the feedback and so on, and they probably won't have recognized it at all as the thing that they first saw, but they might come up with a totally different appreciation of it. So you need input like that to stimulate things from you, not to tell you what to do, but to make you rethink yourself, if you like. Well, I've come to the end of the first sort of collection of ideas, and even if they don't particularly resonate with anything that you think you're doing or likely to do, I hope that's been sort of interesting up to a point and made sense to you. So any other thoughts or comments? It doesn't have to be directly related to it. It's just anything that's come to mind or anything that relates to, you know, your own areas of where you do create things or think about things or whatever. Beryl again?
Something came to me. I was painting in Germany, the River Neckar, and I looked across to the other bank and there were so many colours of green. And I was just thanking God and saying, wow, what a lot of greens, various greens. And he said, yes, and you're going to enjoy it and have it as a recreation. I've never forgotten.
Yes, good. Yeah, what we looked at last time about, God having created and how he creates lots of things for his own pleasure, because there's lots of things that in the world, the creative world, we don't see, or we haven't seen until recently, like, you know, the majestic universe out there and the small world and all the stuff underwater and things like that, that God made. It's been around for a long, long time and nobody actually saw it except him. So sometimes it's just purely for his own pleasure. So I shouldn't be embarrassed about that. But sharing it with someone is great, isn't it? Shared experience of something like that is what can be very fulfilling.
I'm sure some of the animals that God created, he did it specifically to make us wonder why
yes.
and how, like the giraffe and zebra.
Just
wants to tickle our imaginations, I'm sure.
Well, I suppose so, yes. It should send us into wonder and sort of that, and maybe the wondering is just why, but what an imagination God has got, and how many different things he can actually do. Which of course is why we're all different and unique anyway. So anything else come to mind from your own life or background or so on? You don't have to stick to what I've just been saying. This is a general thing.
Margaret had a hand up. What's happened here? Margaret, you need to unmute yourself, Margaret. That's it.
Yeah, when I get stuck, it's wonderful to go into the garden.
Yeah.
I dug up half the bottom of the garden when I was really frustrated at one situation. Mm. And other times I've done lots of pruning. Brilliant way of getting rid of frustration.
Yeah.
It is. It's doing something a bit different. And it's something I'm going to really pick up in the next section. But your mind is still working on one thing because you're now doing something where it doesn't have to overthink.
Yeah.
And you will see that your mind can work at different levels at the same time. I mean, I think I have some of my best ideas when I'm washing up. It doesn't make me want to do the washing up anymore, but at least I think sometimes, because it's so routine and so automatic, and suddenly I think, oh, yes, that's what I need to do, which I hadn't thought about. Otherwise you miss out on things. So, yes, don't despise those, you might call them, the less creative times, the times when you're not really engaged in what you think is your main thing, because it's part of the ebb and flow of the way you go through life.
I was just reminded again of one day. We had a hedge in the front of our garden in the other house. I think it's called St. John's wort. It's a little yellow, or is it Rose of Sharon? It's a little yellow bush, and they used to just open, and I used to sort of think, I'm going to what? And I took a garden chair and sat and watched this flower open. And when it finally, you could see the petals moving, but when it finally opened, it was, I can't explain the emotion that was in me. When it suddenly opened itself, it was just amazing.
Brilliant.
We got a bow with the hand up.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that because we've been blessed with three daughters and a potential three weddings in the future, my husband and I were looking around a wedding fair one day, goodness knows why, but we were, and I looked at the price of the wedding cakes and thought, I can do that. So actually went through the motions of signing myself into a sugarcraft class and found that I had an amazing aptitude for it. And not only did I make the daughters' cakes for their weddings, but a few other people's as well, but it was the sugarcraft and making the flowers and doing intricate sugar work that took all your focus, that actually you couldn't think about anything else, which was, I believe, God sent it to me because it was during a particularly hard time that I was going through, and it completely took me away from that. So it was such a blessing.
Good, thank you. And that's interesting when you suddenly start to do something that you've not thought of doing before and realise that, oh, actually I can. And that encourages you, hopefully, then to try something else at some point. Brilliant. So, yeah, look out for those opportunities, really. Yeah. I mean, my own mother, who, as I was growing up, I knew she had a talent for dressmaking. You know, she did work for other people, actually, so earned some money that way. And I think she was most disappointed that I turned out to be a boy. I don't mean turned out to be a boy, I was always a boy, but you know what I mean. So when I was born, I was a boy. And so she was so looking forward, I think, to making dresses for her daughter. So what did she do? Well, she learned tailoring so she could actually do trousers and jackets. Wow. So she adapted the situation. And then to my amazement, she went off, well, I was sort of a teenager by then, I suppose, to evening classes, and she started doing paintings. And I've got some of them on my room now, on my walls. They're good enough to put there. And people sometimes, when they come in, they say, oh, that's nice. Who did that? And I can say, well, my mum did it. Oh, was she a painter then? No, but she suddenly went through a phase of doing painting. She then tried pottery. I don't have any examples of her pots around the place because that wasn't quite as successful. But it was great that she went and tried that. So sometimes things work out better than others, but she explored. And I sort of realised, wow, there's more creativity in her than would normally be showing itself during life, I guess. So we've got a hand up somewhere. Yes, Wilma, is it?
Yeah. Well, sometimes creativity can be thrust upon you.
Yeah.
I spent quite a few years doing supply teaching in primary schools. And this day when I went to school, the head said to me, and do you know why you're here? And I thought, that's a strange question, you know? And I sort of must have looked quite blankly at her. And she said, you're the art teacher for today. Well, my heart just sank. I thought, the art teacher. And all these classes I've got to take. And so I just had to, oh, my heart, my eyes and my heart just went heavenwards. And I said, help me, please. And the head said to me, oh, don't worry. There's a book that she's following. And I thought, how can I teach? My first class was going to be primary 7, you know, 11 to 12 year olds. And I thought, how can I look at a book and teach an art lesson to this class. However, I just glanced now and again at it, and somehow or another I got through that day. But and the primary seven said, "And are you coming back to next week?" And I said, "Oh, we'll have to wait and see about that." But I did go back the next day because, after all, I did enjoy it. But yeah. I mean, I could never have drawn anything, you know. And the thing was, they had to draw the person sitting across from them. They had to draw the face. Yeah. I mean, I could never have, you know. My drawing was for primaries 1 and 2, not primary 7, you know. Wow. But I was able to give them help in showing where the eyes would be and where the ears would be. And, well, in the end, they were quite good, you know, and we did get through it okay. And as I say, I did go back the next week to do it, so it mustn't have been too bad. But and then another day they said to me, "Do you know why you're here?" And I thought, "Oh, I fell into the same trap again. I should have asked what I'm meant to be doing." And they said, "Oh, you're the drama teacher for today." And I thought, again, I had to think of these scenarios where we had to do drama, but we had quite a good time, so I just had to say thank you to God afterwards for helping me through it all.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay, thanks for that. Sometimes teaching something is a good way of finding out whether you're creative or not on something, and gets you going in a certain way. We've got another hand. Yeah.
Hey, Rod. I lived in Pakistan for a while, and I was living in the mountains in this area, very remote place, and some kids there, and their clothes were kind of falling off them. And where I was staying, they had a little hand sewing machine. So I thought, I'm going to have a go at this and try to make some clothes, or, you know, they're almost like pajamas in a way. And I did. I was really pleased. I even did the collars on them as well. And from then on, I kind of got an interest in sewing. So I've actually got a sewing machine here. I made curtains and all kinds of things. But that was just just came right out of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually did a bit of embroidery because my dad did some embroidery. It sounds funny, doesn't it? Men doing embroidery. It isn't really, because it's just a relaxing sort of hobby. So I didn't take it up very much, but I thought, oh, okay, I can do a bit of that. So when you get someone else doing something and you think you want to have a go, that's one of the best ways of finding out, isn't it? Okay, keep chipping in as and when you think of something, but let me talk a bit more about something else here. Fairly recently, I went back to read my Winnie the Pooh. I hope you've all read Winnie the Pooh at some point, yes? You all read Winnie the Pooh. Now, Winnie the Pooh used to write poems. Okay, remember he used to write poems? And I think there's times when he was sort of asked about, and he says, oh, they just come to me. You know, I just sit and it comes, tiddly bom, or whatever he used to do. He says, so that's the way I seem to work. Whereas Rabbit dashes around, he fetches things. I don't. I just sit and wait. And things come. And that illustrates two different ways in which people operate, or in fact, two different ways in which everybody can operate. And it's been summarized as the hare brain and the tortoise mind, as though we can operate either one way or another at different times. So this is perhaps a bit technical, but bear with it. It is interesting and useful up to a point. But at times, your brain is like the hare, dashing around. It's quick, it's purposeful, it's very deliberate and devoted. It knows exactly what it's doing. It attacks a problem and solves it. That's the hare brain at work, which is how we operate most of the time. I'm not saying when we get older it doesn't become more difficult, but that's one way in which our brain works. But at the same time, our brain is also capable of being a tortoise, where it proceeds more slowly, more leisurely, less purposeful perhaps, more playful. It dreams, it ruminates, It mulls things over. It doesn't attack a problem. It just ponders it. It just thinks generally. And although a tortoise mind might seem a bit aimless, it's employing intelligence as much as the harebrain. And of course, according to the old story, who can sometimes get there first? It's the tortoise. It might get more quickly to the solution or the end product that you're looking to. Because the tortoise mind, the slower brain approach, if you like, is very well suited, better suited to situations that are less well defined, a bit more sort of fuzzy and shadowy, a bit more subtle, and particularly where it doesn't fall into a familiar category and you've got to think a bit more around something. And it's the tortoise mind, which is often more creative, that sort of thing. Have you ever either read your Agatha Christie or watched your Poirot? Poirot, how does he often solve a lot of his mysteries? He doesn't go dashing around picking up clues here. He sits, he closes his eyes, he employs the little grey cells, and suddenly, it's come to him. It's come to him. So sometimes our mind just needs to be still and go slowly. And it's almost like your subconscious is working on something at a different pace, but often producing better stuff. And actually, your subconscious mind is being trained all the time through life. More and more stuff has gone into your subconscious as you've got used to it. So that now, for instance, certain things that took you a while to learn how to do, you do automatically. I don't suppose any of you ever think about how to tie your shoelaces now, do you? If you see it's come undone, you just bend down and do it because it's locked into you. At some point, you learned how to tie your shoelace. Now, you can be thinking of something else, notice your shoelace is undone, and actually, if you stop to think about doing your shoelace, it would get in the way of something else you're doing, like the conversation you're having or something you're looking at. I guess a lot of driving, the time you're driving around, you're doing it out of built-in experience of this. You don't stop and think all the time. But the great thing about your mind at these two levels is that when suddenly you need it, your sort of more conscious mind comes back in very quickly and helps you out. So don't worry if you think I'm driving along and I'm not totally focused on this, because actually you are. Your brain is ready to come back into play in that sort of way. But basically, I'm saying we get instincts, we train ourselves. That's why if someone throws something at you, you very quickly move out of the way before you even think about it. And creativity sometimes operates out of that. So I'm going to take my own example of playing the piano, where I can't explain now how I do it in the sense of which fingers I'm going to use, what the process is like. You're not thinking about the mechanism of the piano or the technique. And so as people develop their skills in these sort of areas, that becomes more subconscious, more instinctive, so that then you can actually focus on the music. And by that, I don't mean a page with dots on it and lines and things like that, because that isn't the music. The music is what is heard. It's the sound that you produce. So great performers, of course, they've done all the training, all the technique and so on, but they, as they sit down at the piano, they're not worried about, oh, what's the opening bar of that sonata like? They can just get into the music and recreate it in that sort of way, and so that the person listening to it just forgets about the fact that this person has had to work out how to put the fingers in the right place and they get the touch right on the keyboard and all the rest of it. And that'll be true of a lot of skillful things. Actors, I could never be an actor. I would just be paralyzed at the thought that I would get it wrong. I couldn't learn the lines, I'd be in the wrong place. Actors have to do all that sort of stuff, learn the lines, work out the positions and so on. But then the moment the play starts, they've got to forget all that. That's all in their subconscious in order to enter into the process of acting, performing with others, communicating with the audience, and so on. So there's a lot of creativity, what I'm trying to say, is going on beneath the surface, and that grows the more you practice something, do something, and so on. And by definition, the subconscious is subconscious. It's below your normal level of consciousness. You almost have to let it get on with it. Overthinking gets in the way. You can't order your subconscious around. All you can do is sort of feed it in advance and practice things and do whatever's necessary for the task, and then just let it happen. So creativity is often enhanced and aided by a more slow, deliberate sort of thinking that is more patient, more pondering, not thinking rapidly, frantically about different things. But you might imagine what's sometimes called slow thinking has largely fallen into disuse, because these days life is much faster. Everything's got to be instant. Everything's got to be done quickly. So we have this perception now of time being something that we are fighting against, that we're battling against it, or time is now a commodity. It's precious commodity, and time is money, and so on. So the urge has been to think faster, get results. But actually, leisurely thinking, or just allowing the brain to go along, trundle along almost at its own way, is very important when it comes to the idea of letting the creative side come out. And I think that's a little bit, going back to what I said at the beginning, like when you sleep on something, you have to stop thinking rapidly about it, and yet somehow you are still thinking about things in that part of the life of the mind, if you like. I wonder if you've got any thoughts on that, but a question that came to mind when I heard about that, and in fact I was reading a whole book called Hare Brain Tortoise Mind on that. How does God think? Does God think fast or slow? I'll leave that one with you, but I think, Beryl, you wanted to say something there?
I don't play the piano. Tell me, when you're looking at the music, are you thinking, this is what I have to play, or do you hear the actual music in your head?
Well, obviously, pianists eventually learn not to have the music in front of them. They don't usually do that. And most of my playing now, unless I'm asked to play a particular song where I need the music in front of me because people are singing, I will improvise anyway. So I've come away from having to have that visual code in front of me. And it was a breakthrough, really, when having learnt to all the grades and done all the pieces and so on, suddenly I realised I can play anyway without music. But of course, if I'm trying to learn a particular piece of music, you have to absorb everything that's there on the page, just like an actor has to learn his lines. But in the end, you can't perform it just by reading the music and pressing the notes, okay? I once was at a school concert where it was a competition, actually. There were prizes at the end for the performers, and the music teacher that was going to be saying who had won said, I listened for two things, obviously technique, proficiency, but also musicality, or if you like, the creativity of it. And he said, you might think that was a great performance because it sounded technically perfect, but that may not be the one that wins, okay? Because he's listening to the music coming across. And someone else, you know, there might be lots of wrong notes, but actually it's a better performance than someone who is technically proficient. So I think what I'm saying out of all that, to answer your thing, is this would work in lots of different ways. The moment you can put the technicalities of it in the background and absorb yourself in just thinking, I'm now creating or recreating this music, and I don't care if I get a wrong note, because when you're learning, oh, you're embarrassed by a wrong note, you stop and start again. It holds you up. Professionals, they just keep moving on. They're not bothered about it at all. And actually, you think, how have they memorized all that? Well, in some ways, they haven't memorized it. They've just played it so often that it's just like breathing to them. So, you know, it comes out in different ways like that. And I'm sure that's true of anybody at the top of their game in sports or anything like that. You've got a certain amount of talent, you practice it, but then you just do it. You just have to sort of get on with it. So the mind is an extraordinary thing. Does anyone want to answer the question, how does God think, fast or slow, by the way? Now, you should be used to me by now to know what my answer is going to be. Does God think fast or slow? The answer, of course, is yes. Malcolm, what are you going to say?
All I was going to say was that all through life, in all sorts of different situations, we should be learning from our mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. True. And not being bothered by them, therefore. So it's not really, in the end, categorising them as mistakes, but as opportunities, really. Yeah. Is anyone going to come up with the how does God think? I know it's a funny question. You used to be like that. Well, of course, my answer is...
Both.
Oh, both. Yes. Okay. Was that Margaret said that or someone else?
No, it's me. Val.
Oh, it's Val. Yes. Okay. Yes, of course, I'm going to say both.
No, I would have said slow.
Well, that's the only Hebraic answer. I suppose what I'm getting at here is that God is capable of doing everything that we can do, so he must be able to do both. Did he create fast or slow? It seems as though he just simply spoke and it happened. No sooner said than done, someone has commented. But that might be one way of looking at it. Another way might be, well, it's taken a long time to produce the way the world is now, for instance. He's allowed things to develop over time without going into too many controversial theories and so on. But I think the great thing is when God was creating, he wasn't under any time pressure. There was no one nagging him to get on with it. There's no one telling him, haven't you finished the first day yet? Isn't it time to get on with the next bit or something? I just get the impression that God wasn't sort of like, he wasn't busy doing it. He was purposeful, but without having the pressure of time. So God can think fast, of course he can. Sometimes he thinks very slowly, probably more slowly than we're prepared to allow ourselves to think, or that we think that he should think, you know. But part of what I'm saying is that the life of your mind isn't always in the fast lane. It's not always on the super highway. Sometimes it just needs to slow down, go into the slow lane, go into the lay-by. Yeah, maybe even pause, maybe even have a nap, you know, anything like that. You don't have to chase. You can be a poo bear rather than a rabbit chasing around. And sometimes the best ideas don't come out of a sort of a great chain of reasoning that goes from this to this to this to this. You've all had examples, haven't you, where sometimes something just pops into your head, an idea has just suddenly come out of the blue. How does that work? Well, it works because your mind is thinking about things, but at its own pace, rather than you trying to force it to come up with something. So ideas do just suddenly seem to arrive. Where does that come from? Well, of course, it might be that God's inspired you, or you remember something from the past. But sometimes being relaxed about something means you're more receptive, you're more suggestive, you get nudged along rather than pushed along. Or you get a hunch, you get a feeling, and you act on it like that. So now, another thing where some of you might want to help me out on this, because obviously I'm not going to understand this very well. Sometimes people talk about creativity and having ideas and bringing them to fruition as either incubation or gestation, equivalent of having a baby. Now, of course, what do I know about that? Well, say, help me out here. It's a fascinating process, I guess, the way that a woman has a baby. How much is she actually controlling it? How much is she doing it? How much is it actually happening anyway? She is, if you like, the incubator of something. She contributes towards it, but you can't suddenly decide, right, I've had enough, I want to have my baby today, can you? You know, 3 months, that's quite enough, or I'm getting quite big now, better get on with this. You have to wait. You have to wait. You carry something, and eventually you deliver it, but there's been a process going on at which obviously the woman has been part of it, but not the only person involved in the creation of it. Something else must be going on. Now, I've probably said quite enough and probably gone completely off the rails on this, but I don't want to help me out on whether you think that the process of a woman bearing a child, bringing a child to deliverance, suggests a creative process and is useful as an analogy for something else? Or should I just shut up because I don't know what I'm talking about? Did it feel, those of you that had children then, did it feel like you were being creative? And how much did you feel it was you being creative? Come on, someone must have an idea.
Creative. Creative. With a V.
Yeah, creative. Yes. But
no.
You didn't feel you were involved in a creative process?
No.
Oh, dear. Right.
I just thought it was incredible.
Yeah. You
know, phases and the quickening that.
Yeah.
I think that's the most exciting bit, when the baby quickens. And then the actual birth is amazing.
Right.
Even though it's painful, it's amazing.
Right.
I mean, you just, I don't know, I just think you get on with it.
Right, okay. But sometimes, I suppose what I'm trying to say in this is that sometimes that is the way other creativity happens. It's something that's, you're not sort of forcing it to make it happen. It comes to you.
Yeah? You can't.
Okay. Well, yeah, I know you can't in that sense. Yes, I'm trying to see if this is a useful analogy for something else. Okay.
Nobody else, ladies.
Nobody else is willing to contribute to this, I think. So
can I just say, it is obviously the most amazing creative process that goes on. If you look into the actual minutiae of a baby growing and how it grows, it is beyond probably the human comprehension. Because it's obviously God's creation, and He's using the woman as an incubator, if you like.
Yeah, but also a co-creator, because you are contributing towards that in some way. It's your blood, it's your...
To me, it's the most amazing and wonderful process that just can't be compared with anything else.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry for men because they haven't had that experience.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm sure that, yeah, there's something in all of that, that it's an example of you've been involved in something, but you're not actually doing it all yourself. And I suppose I'm fumbling away to try and get another example. Sometimes if I have an idea, let's say in music again, I don't know what's going to happen on that. But if I start playing, something comes to me. It's like something has germinated anyway, and therefore it develops in a certain way. And maybe after a period of time, if I play it enough, I feel it's become a piece rather than just some improvisation, just some sort of tunes or something. So it starts small, and without me having to sort of, I'm not trying to compose something, I'm not trying to put a lot of effort into it, I'm just enjoying the process of playing, music starts to develop and emerge. And at the end, I've got a baby of some kind. But we'll perhaps leave that analogy where it belongs.
Something's just come to me, Paul. We should be grateful that we're part of what God has done, that He used us, you know? Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Thankful.
Anyway, this idea of slow thinking in certain circumstances, even stopping thinking, really, and just sort of letting the mind do its own thinking, you say it's got a mind of its own. Well, actually, your mind has got a mind of its own. I think put it like that. That sounds strange. But it's not rushing into judgments and decisions just on the basis of, I've got to think this through and that's it. That sometimes might be the case. But sometimes it just needs to be left to sort of get on with it. And eventually something comes to you. And in fact, people that measure neural activity and look at, I mean, why do we call them brain waves? Because they see the brain in terms of waves. And therefore, you can see faster and slower brain waves actually at work. And the more creative brainwaves are the slower brainwaves, apparently. I don't know how they measure all these things and work that out, but I suppose it's to do with being more relaxed and someone not sort of striving at things. But we need both. We also talk to them about having a gut feel about something where we're not really allowing our minds to tell us the answer, but we just feel it in some way. The Japanese have an expression, they call it thinking with the abdomen, which is equivalent to our sort of gut feeling. So the brain is involved, but perhaps not quite in the way that we sometimes think when we're dashing around trying to find solutions to things. Well, I want to talk about creativity in the church as well, which is, you might think, is a bit more sort of relevant to us. But I think we desperately need more creativity in the church to avoid things stagnating, becoming routine, and, yes, dare I say, boring. Dare I even say more boring to God. He's probably longing for us to engage with him in creativity within the church, simply because it's an expression of God himself. He created you to be creative inside his creation, and he's given you gifts, tools, various kinds to do all sorts of different things, and they're all useful within the context of the community of believers that we call the church, in many different ways. So the creative people aren't just those that go to the front and lead worship or something. There's lots of different ways in which creativity matters within the church. It's valuable because it's valuable to God. The fact that the Bible starts off, "In the beginning, God created," is almost setting that down at the beginning as really, really important. And God has entrusted each one of us as stewards to continue being creative, because we are made in his image. We've got his creative DNA within us, if you like. And creativity, therefore, is never an afterthought. It should be, you know, central, beginning, middle, and end of everything, really, about being creative. And if you think, oh, there's never enough time to do something, there's never enough resources, we don't have enough people, creativity actually helps to sort things out and say, yeah, we should be doing this, we should be spending our time on that. And the thing that sort of kills creativity is when we say, oh, we'll just do the same thing again because it's safe and we know it works. And actually, the job of any leadership, particularly therefore within a church, is one of vision and stewardship and moving things on, not just management and repetition, duplication. So it should be a feature of leaders to get the creativity that's there in the church moving in such a way that the church itself develops. Okay, some specifics then, perhaps. Creativity will widen and deepen the whole experience of worship. And of course, I don't just mean singing songs, having a worship service, but communion with God, partnership with him, love, and just existing with him, knowing him better, and so on. And if we can create using our whole hearts, mind, soul, strength, and everything else, and doing it for God's glory, then we are worshiping him. And it doesn't have to be in a church building, on a Sunday, whatever, it can be anywhere. So it widens and deepens the experience of worship away from just, here's a Sunday service, here's some songs, let's sing that. And creativity, therefore, can benefit personal worship, devotion, if you like, to God. There must be a reason why God says, sing me a new song, not just go through an old playlist, but, you know, sing a new song to the Lord. But it can also feed into corporate worship as well. So you learn to do this together, not just on your own. So one person's creativity sparks off someone else's creativity. So worship's one obvious way, perhaps. But sometimes, don't we just go through worship as a routine almost? How can we do something more creative in the whole realm of worship within church? Creativity also forms community. So this is not the sort of myth that you get of creativity is about some great genius or artist in his attic and has a eureka moment, and there he is, all in isolation and sorts it all out on his own. Creativity is much more about community. It's a team sport, if you like. And doing a task together and finding solutions together to something, like let's change the building in some way. It's not one person that's going to make that decision and work it out. It needs other people to think things through. How are we going to serve the community better, our town or whatever? All these things require us to learn to work together. And so we're building ourselves up as a community at the same time. Tackling a common issue, problem, or creating something together means that you will work with each other. It bonds people together even after the task is done. It leaves behind the sort of individualistic, very sort of consumer-based, isolationist society that we've created, and gets us back, I think, more to living in the way that God wants. We just empower each other in a new way. And I guess we start to really learn what the Bible means by fellowship together. This very sort of strange word where, yes, let's just get together and have fellowship. Okay, so in the same room, we have a cup of tea, we're having fellowship. Actually, if you start doing something with people and using your creativity to help theirs and so on, fellowship really takes off and deepens. And creativity can also be used to teach truth in more compelling and deeper ways. Someone has said that the deepest places in our lives where actually we hold the greatest resistance to truth are not ultimately reached by instruction. Something else has to unlock things a little bit before the truth actually makes its way in there. How can we find unique and compelling ways to get the truth across? Didn't Jesus do this? He was remarkable in the way that he not just told stories, but the way he interacted with people, used questions, and so on. The trouble is, most of the time we do church with our left brain, if you understand the sort of left-right brain situation. And if we're not careful, we present biblical truth or even the gospel and preach the gospel in the same way as a scientist might present propositions with supporting evidence, as though that's going to really get into the heart of it. But often the power of the biblical message and the gospel story and so on isn't best delivered that sort of way, in terms of sort of left brain categorization and so on. But creativity can lift it into a different part of our being and therefore create a better response to this. And you know how often you probably now people read the Bible or they preach on something, you think, yeah, I know that, heard that, so on. But someone does it more creatively, it goes deeper into you and can break open areas that's got too familiar with things. And also, we ought to say that creativity invites us to think about doing mission differently. And mission, good mission, really, by definition, has to be creative. And someone has said the church doesn't have mission or do mission. It is on a mission. It should be almost like what we're here for all the time. We are on a mission to portray Christ to the world, to preach the gospel, and so on. How can we do that more effectively so that people are impacted or they grow or whatever? Well, we think about how to use our gifts and our talents in new ways, and creative expression can help do this. It encourages people to work out of their own gifts and passions and so on as a true vocation. And of course, it not only impacts the world that you're ministering to, but it impacts the church itself that's doing that, because it sort of becomes not just a chore, oh, we've got to go out and evangelize or do mission or something. You actually realize this is part of what we're here to do in the first place. It's what we're all about. Now, has that opened up any thoughts for you on creativity within the context of church, either services, Sundays, and so on? Have you had experiences of people suddenly saying, yeah, let's do this in a different way. Let's think this through. And maybe you've had situations where people have suggested something and others said, oh, no, we don't want to do that. Let's just stick to what we do. Let's play safe and sort of squash it and so on. Any thoughts about creativity within the church? Does it sound like a good thing to aim for? And if you've got good leaders, they'll recognise that. Because often it's leaders that don't want to be too creative. It sort of threatens them. Not careful. Anyone got any examples or any other thoughts on in that context? No? Oh, yeah. Margaret, yeah.
Yeah, my experience of leaders, they don't want change.
Yeah.
And pictures and images are for children, not for adults.
Right. And
doing anything creative, you can do it with children, but you can't do it with adults.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And I knew it was for adults and I'm not there for children.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Yeah. Yeah, the creative people can go and do Sunday school and leave the rest of us to do our own thing. Yeah, that can be a danger, certainly. But as we said all the time, this is actually about rediscovering the child within you again, that wonder that you had before the education system turned you into an adult that loses imagination and creativity and forces you into a certain channel. So, Can you think of ways in which you could offer something creative within your fellowship or just your small group?
I've had an email today from my house group leader, life group leader, and it's been suggested by the leadership that each life group should take a service, the morning service, which will bring input of various creative gifts. Because we've really realised that we've really not been using the gifts that God has given us. They've been cast aside, as it were. Over the years.
Because of the one man does it all sort of ministry. We're paying him so he gets on with it. I mean, I'm sure this is part of what God is doing and shaking within the churches to get people back to ministering to each other. And it's great that it's, as a life group, if you are going to do a service as a life group, you will have to think about it in advance amongst yourselves. So it will inspire you within that group. You know, who can do what? As I said, it's about community. It will build you together. You'll be different afterwards. You'll be a better life group after you put on that service. And then watching another group do it as well will be inspiring, I'm sure. That sounds very positive. Yeah. Yeah. So we've got so familiar with what church seems to do that we just sit through it if we're not careful. And I think that's it. So has anyone thought about creative Bible reading? If the Bible, for instance, is read in your service from the front, sometimes it's just sort of mumbled through or just read. Have you got any gifted people who can actually read the Bible very creatively? And I don't mean that they put on a silly hat or, you know, dance around at the same time. I obviously mean that they bring expression into it. They read it almost as though it was being written afresh for them, for you. That's something to try and encourage. The public reading of scripture needs to be done, you know, creatively rather than just here's the first lesson, blah, 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 blah. You can practice that in your small groups, you know, anything like that. Let's read a passage together and split it up between different people and take on different characters and different voices. If you've got a Bible reading app, something like David Suchet's reading through the whole Bible, you'll know, of course, that he does it because he's an actor. He can put expression and things into it like that. So think about creative Bible reading. Have you heard of creative listening? I mean, what do you do when it's your turn to sit and listen to a sermon? Do you think, okay, I can sort of switch off, or at least after 5 minutes, I can switch off. I've got to look attentive to start with. Creative listening is just trying to get yourself more involved in what is being said, almost like this is a conversation. I know I can't interrupt him and I know I can't say something back, but let's engage with it as though I can, you know. So don't regard it as just someone talking at you and I'll sit down, I'll just take notes. But actually in your mind, sort of start to answer back or engage in it as though it's a, if it's a really good message, actually, you'll find that'll be easier to do. And that way, I think God will inspire you more and give you more things out of what the preacher is saying than if you just listen to his words, rather strangely, perhaps. So perhaps we need to teach our congregations to do creative listening. Just a thought. Oh, it's stimulated someone anyway. Val, and then Malcolm, I think.
Well, Richard and I listen to the Bible read every morning. So we have an audible version, and it is definitely creative. There are all sorts of noises in the background, but unfortunately, I think God needs to do a work in me, because the people who take the parts of people that in my mind are very manly and are just the wrong voices, so I end up being very frustrated.
Well, if it's done badly, you know, I made a good attempt, but no thanks, it didn't work. That is the problem of that. The first time I got the version of the Bible read out on what was tapes in those days, I thought, oh, this would be great. It was read through so quickly, as though they sort of, to make it sort of manageable, to get it on a certain number of tapes and keep the cost down, it was, let's rush through it. And then I thought, this is no good, it's not what I want. It's got to be done well. It's not just doing something different for the sake of it, it's got to be done well. And that comes back to the idea of feedback. You know, I mean, if someone doesn't read the Bible very well, somehow politely you ought to say, well, can we help you to do it better? Or perhaps you've got another ministry that you could think of doing. Because we've no right at any point to bore people with what we do creatively. Malcolm?
Well, what I was thinking when you said about listening to a sermon is that I think in the vast majority of cases when people are speaking, you wouldn't dare interrupt them.
Yeah. So you've got into a mindset that I've now got to be passive. And actually, in the end, you don't take in as much, do you? And might even fall asleep. Certainly your mind wanders. And it's a pity you can't, you know, treat it as a conversation, but you've got to pretend you are, really. That's what I'm saying, isn't it? You've got to. I would find, and I do this, if I'm listening to someone speak and they say something really good and interesting, I'll think, I'm not interested in what they're going to say next. I want to pursue that thought that they've just given me, and I want to talk about that with God, effectively. Because that was the bit that impacted me at the time. So I will switch my listening to sort of being more actively involved in that, and then hopefully not miss too much and pick up the next bit and so on. But, you know, if we're not getting new thoughts out of what we're hearing, then really what sort of communication is going on? It's just someone that's prepared a talk and delivering it. And that isn't really teaching, and it isn't really, teaching the Bible or even preaching a good sermon. So sometimes the onus is on us to be, even an audience is part of the creative process, actually. Someone writes the play, actors learn it, they put it on, they perform it, but there's something missing if they're not doing it in front of an audience. And if they can sense that the audience is there and they're with them, and you know, they may laugh at the right time, or they just sense the tension in the theatre and things like that. The audience is actually part of the whole process of creativity that's going on. So maybe we need to develop something of that even in church, so that it's not a few people doing something and everybody else doing nothing for a while. Has that stimulated any more thoughts or ideas? I've come to the end, really. But
can I just share one last thing before I've got to go in a minute?
Yeah.
What I found has stimulated me a lot is I read a lot of what I call faction books on my Kindle. So they're biblical faction books. So a writer has taken one aspect or a character and padded it out with the story and conversation and the sort of life that they led, in those days, obviously having done an enormous amount of research, and I've checked on it quite a lot, and I think, really, did that happen? Then I look it up in the Bible and say, yep, that happened. And that has stimulated me, and I've learned almost more from that in recent times. I think that is a brilliant way to be creative.
Are there any examples of these particular books that you could give us the title of, or anything come to mind? Or
well, I can email them to you.
Okay. I mean, I can remember one or two in the past. There was someone called Francis Hudson, I think, who wrote very good. You're right, faction is a good word. The story of someone in the Bible, picking up the Bible and obviously fleshing it out. So there's a bit of extra sort of creativity going on in all that. But it's probably as realistic as it would have been then, because we all know the Bible only gives us bare outlines of lots of things. It really doesn't fill things out. So if someone is doing it well, then yeah, that's a good thing.
I can certainly email some titles to you.
Okay, yeah, if anyone's interested in that sort of thing, but yeah, again, it has to be done well, and it's good you're checking it out, that it goes back to the scriptures, because the next time you read that scripture or you hear it taught on, some of that background will come to mind again.
Yeah,
it does. To that. Anybody else anything to contribute? Okay, well, that's my two sessions on this topic, which, let's face it, if Steve hadn't decided we were going to do our next retreat on creativity, I wouldn't have spent the time thinking about this and reading a few books. I mentioned one, Harebrained Tortoise Mind. It's interesting, not a Christian book, but tells me something about what's going on. We've been looking at some of the teaching of Sir Ken Robinson, who is no longer with us now, and he wasn't speaking from a Christian point of view, but he understood this sort of thing. Even a little book by John Cleese called Creativity, A Short and Cheerful Guide. He was sharing how, because he was a very creative person in what he wrote and performed and so on, gave some insights into this. And then a couple of books that were more Christian, one called I think it's just called Divine Inspiration, Finding Your Creativity with the Holy Spirit or something. So it's given me a chance to dig out some resources on this and think this through, because I do want to be more creative and enjoy being creative more, not just about producing more, but enjoying it more and learning to enjoy it more with others, which is what I think I will get out of this time together in March. It will just be being with other people that will all just want to, well, have fun and make stuff, play stuff, write stuff, share stuff or whatever, but doing it together in the hope that it will birth something for either our personal lives or our church lives and so on. Next week, Steve is going to share what he's come up with on this theme, ready for it. And in the following week, a variety of other people are going to have short slots on what creativity means to them and how they're going to do it within the retreat, I think. I think that's the idea for the fourth one. And then we take a break because of the actual retreat stroke conference. And then we'll see what happens after that. Shall we switch the recording off at this point?